This is Radio Today broadcasting in Johannesburg on 1485 AM and nationally on DSTV Audio Channel 869.
Changing Destiny is proudly brought to you by WEM Media right here on Radio Today. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
Welcome to Changing Destiny. My name is Paul Pereira. Now, South Africans, often we are preoccupied with our own particular story, and I'm talking these days particularly about everything must fall, from Rhodes must fall, to Zuma must fall, to fees must fall, and what. But of course, we are also part of a bigger story, that of the continent, of Africa herself. And sometimes we like to think that Africa is one thing. We're not dislike or unlike a lot of foreigners in that regard. And so we think of ourselves as singing a national anthem and flying an African flag, when of course it's 50-odd different states. And sometimes these are all brushed with the same brush as being in a renewal or a rising or a renaissance or falling apart. But of course, it is a far more complex story than that. And when we say that we are African, we are of course African, but very unusually so, not least of all because one in five South Africans are not black African. And that brings a cultural difference to this country that is unique on the continent, and also strengths to it that are unique, but also societal fragilities, as we see in some of the protest actions going around in the country today that are partly about the issues they claim to be, but very often about matters of race or what would in other places be called ethnicity. So how is Africa doing? What is the issue of ethnicity in today's reality on the continent, and how is it playing out in politics and in societal stability? Or, as Dr. Alban, the singer, once said, "Africa, tell me how you're doing." And the person who's going to be telling us today is the editor-in-chief at Good Governance Africa, and he's the editor of Africa In Fact, which is their quarterly intellectual journal that takes us right around the continent with contributions from all over. And this month, or rather this quarter, it's looking at ethnicity in particular, and his name is Richard Jurgens. And we'll be chatting with Richard just after we've listened to Salif Keita's Africa.
Happy.
Welcome back. You're on Changing Destiny with Paul Pereira, and today we're chatting with Richard Jurgens. He's the editor of Africa in Fact, which is the quarterly journal of the NGO Good Governance Africa. And we had Good Governance Africa on the show a couple of times about 2 years ago, and we were talking very generally around the theme of what was happening in Africa at the time. And I think our last discussion, which was with the then CEO of Good Governance Africa, John Andres, we spoke about Zimbabwe in particular. But today we will be talking more about ethnicity a little bit. But I think let's just remind ourselves about who and what Good Governance Africa is. But firstly, Richard, welcome aboard.
Oh, thanks, Paul. Good to see you again.
Richard, tell us a bit about Good Governance Africa, what you guys do and why.
Good Governance Africa is a not-for-profit organization. We basically do research and advocacy focusing on governance across the continent of Africa with the aim of enabling better governance.
So basically it does what it says it does.
We do what we say we do, or we try to.
You try to. So you're monitoring a lot of different places. I mean, part of my intro was to make the point, Africa isn't one thing.
Absolutely. We count Africa as having 55 countries. And, of course, it divides into a whole range of regions and, of course, many languages. Africa isn't a country. It's a continent.
We don't often speak here of ethnicity so much as we speak of race for obvious reasons and given our history. Put a bit of Africa's ethnic situation into perspective for us.
Well, as we know, Africa is very diverse ethnically, but it helps to put some figures to it and get some perspective that way. It's very interesting to note that Africa is reckoned to be home to about 3,000 ethnicities and about 2,000 languages. And if you compare that to Europe, well, Europe has, at the last reckoning, 87 distinct ethnicities. 33 of them counted as national, and the other 54 as ethnic minorities.
Now, in Africa, of course, famously, the boundaries are those drawn up mainly by the European colonizers themselves, so they don't follow the usual nation-state sort of boundaries you might find with ethnicity or taking that into account. And yet, the place hasn't fallen apart.
Yes, and I think that speaks really to the resilience of African cultures right across the continent, for one thing. It doesn't always speak to the efficacy of government across the continent, I would have to say, and the quality of governance, but it shows the resilience of African peoples right across.
Now, if we think back to some of the famously ethnically based strife in Africa, and I'm thinking all the way back to Biafra in the 60s in Nigeria and that sort of thing, again, and not a lot of it. Or am I getting that wrong?
There is surprisingly little ethnic or conflict that can be identified as having an ethnic component, let me put it that way, across the continent, given that there are so many different cultures, languages, peoples. As part of the latest edition of our journal, Africa in Fact, we have some very interesting maps which correlate conflict with ethnicity, and they show where the hotspots are, and they're very interesting to study. They show that a lot of the continent is relatively unaffected, but the areas where it is affected are greatly affected.
Give us some examples.
Well, of course, there's the DRC, which looks to be on the edge of some very problematic developments. But we've recently seen Burundi as being another example. Of course, Kenya, 2008, the riots there after an election that was alleged or thought to be rigged had an ethnic component. It would take quite a long list to cover it all. You could say that there is a part ethnic component in the conflict of the Amazigh people in Morocco with the government.
Is that the Western Sahara story?
No, they're a different group. They're an original. They're a group of people who were originally living in Morocco before it was inhabited by Arabic-speaking people, and they count themselves as indigenous, and there's been something of a conflict there. But we have an article in the journal which shows that there's some resolution coming to that conflict at last.
Now, as it affects South Africa, of course, we have troops, I don't know if we still have in DRC, but certainly we go and we're summoned there, so anything blowing up there is of an immediate consequence to us.
It is indeed. I couldn't speak to that. It's not something I've looked at closely in the last while. I have heard anecdotally from various journalists. I know that we still do have troops there, but I couldn't confirm that.
Where else? We've got them in Sudan, I think. Is that an ethnic group?
I think we're peacekeeping there.
Peacekeeping or peacemaking or
just yes. Well, I don't know if you can make peace between people who don't want to make love, but...
All right. I want to just come into Southern Africa for the moment. As I say, we did last time we spoke with GGA, we spoke about Zimbabwe, and for obvious reasons, that's of great concern to South Africans, not least of which because a lot of Zimbabweans or former Zimbabweans live here now. What is the situation? It just seems to be a never-ending same old story and somehow just muddles through.
Well, it's very interesting when you look at it from a different perspective. I think one of the things that happens in the media is that things tend to get framed in a certain way, and then it's hard to break away from that frame. I think this is one of the reasons why this whole edition of Africa, in fact, is interesting, because it places a different emphasis on what's happening in a lot of African countries and gives us new insights. So to answer your question, it turns out that in Zimbabwe, there is, even though Zimbabwe has relatively few ethnic groups, there is a strong ethnic component to the ongoing political turmoil and one might even say conflict. To give you an example, just to say first that, as we know, Zimbabwe has two main groups, the Shona and the Ndebele, and there's several other smaller ones, the Kalangas, the Vendas, and even the Xhosas, which is something I didn't know until I did this work.
So the Zulus and the Xhosas are there.
Exactly. They get around.
They're everywhere.
But as one of our writers, Owen Gagari, argues, a lot of the political turmoil that's presently going on can be attributed to what might be termed ethnic problems, in that there are conflicts between sections of the Shona. So, for instance...
And those are ethnically based conflicts.
Yes. You could say it's a sub-ethnic conflict in that case. We can perhaps discuss Somalia in a bit, but Somalia is an example of where you have an ostensibly homogenous country, but the conflict there is dominated by several powerful clans within the homogenous group. Takes on an ethnic dimension, you could say. So it emerges, for instance, that the leader of the opposition movement for democratic change, Morgan Tsvangirai, is himself a Karanga, which is one of the subgroups of the Shona, and he has himself been accused of trying to prevent Ndebele speakers from rising in the party. So you see that this kind of issue arises not only within the dominant group, but even within the opposition groups.
Well, I'm hoping a bit later, I want to keep outside of our borders for now, but I'm hoping a bit later to come back into our borders to talk specifically about whether that manifests in our own politics. But right next to us, of course, is what is supposedly always, we're told, the shining example of what could be, what should be, and that is, of course, Botswana. But Botswana is, outside of the Tswana, it's got Bushmen, but it seems to be fairly uni-ethnic, and is that not actually one of the big reasons for her success?
Yeah, you could indeed. Botswana, as you say, is ranked as among Africa's successes in democratic terms and also in economic terms. And you could attribute that to the fact that it has very limited ethnic differences within its population. About 79% of the population are Tswana, for instance. There's a minority group of Kalanga, 11%, and then you get the Basarwa.
Those Kalangas again.
It was Karangas and now Kalangas.
Oh, Karangas and Kalangas, right.
And then you get the Barsawa, or who we know as the Bushmen. Now, they constitute about 3% of the population in Botswana. But the point is, I think, here that even though Botswana is lionized even as a tremendous success democratically and economically, economic interests always play a role, and the Bushmen have suffered considerably from that. Notably, areas where diamonds have been discovered tend to be cleared of Bushmen. There have been forcible evictions. In fact, most of the Bushman population of Botswana has been forcibly moved from a place that they regarded as their homeland or territory to another place. And of course, also when game reserves are opened. So it needs to be pointed out that the government has fought the Bushmen, if I can put it that way, domestically and internationally in the courts, aside from oppressing them as they claim. And even in 2006, when the Bushmen won the right to return home to areas that they regarded as their own, the government banned them from returning until the Court of Appeal overturned the ban. So it's an ongoing issue there.
Now, in Botswana, for all her democratic pretensions, they never have a change of majority party.
Yes, that might be related to the ethnic aspect that we're discussing, but I couldn't really speak to that at the moment. We're looking more at ethnicity.
We are chatting with Richard Jurgens of Good Governance Africa, and we'll be doing more of that just after we've listened to Toto's Africa.
Welcome back. You're with Paul Pereira and Richard Jurgens. Richard, if we look at the continent as a whole, if we can be that crass and look at the thing as a whole, the state of democratization, which we have been extolling since the early 1990s, what is it actually?
Well, it depends where you're looking from, I must say. If you're looking from Europe, you might very well be affected by what I think The Guardian, in a wonderfully expressed phrase, described as an undemocratic continent ruled by autocratic old men who pay lip service to the wishes of the people who elected them.
Right.
I think that's a wonderful expression of a stereotype that pretty much does exist about Africa. Mm. But if you look at the facts, you know, the Economist Intelligence Unit's Democracy Index of 2015, it shows that there's been a dramatic drop in coups since 2000, that holding elections has become more the rule than the exception across the continent.
People expect that, and when people expect it, it becomes part of the way the system works.
Absolutely, yeah. It's about expectations becoming realities, and realities can't become real until they're expected. Right. There are still deficits, one has to say. There are 9 countries still ruled by men who have been more in power for more than 20 years. Uganda, Equatorial Guinea, Zimbabwe are examples. In other cases, presidents are seeking to overturn constitutional limitations on more than 2 terms as president. We've seen examples of that in Burundi, there's in Uganda. That may be one of the issues in the DRC at the moment. In fact, it almost certainly is. But we should also realize, I think, that democracy isn't only about holding elections. That's why the Mo Ibrahim Index takes the rule of law as a fundamental attribute of democracy and looks at that closely. And if you do that, you see that there is a spread of populations a growing tendency of populations across Africa to expect things of their governments, which I think is the big change from the previous generation of big man rulers. So we're seeing continuing challenges to the development of real democracy across the continent, but it certainly is moving in the right direction.
If we look at ethnicity and its role?
Well, that's a very complex and detailed question, and I would have to urge you to get our journal and read all the different articles, because they contain a great deal of very
some of the things that are
researched.
On your mind when we look at these sorts of issues.
Yeah, an example is in Kenya, for instance. I mentioned earlier that that the 2008 violence had an ethnic component. It depends on who's talking, but one explanation for that was that Raila Odinga, who's a Luo, which is one of the Kenyan groups, amalgamated 41 ethnic groups to oppose President Kibaki at the time, who's a Kikuyu. And when they felt that the election was rigged, members of Kibaki's tribe were targeted, and of course reciprocated, and so the violence spread. That's one explanation. It certainly shows that from the perspective of Kenyans, ethnicity certainly played a role in recent politics. Other examples are, you know, in Nigeria, we have a very interesting article about the Fulani, who are a nomadic group whose wealth is mainly counted in cattle, who have ongoing conflicts with more settled groups. It helps to realize that Nigeria has more than 250 ethnic groups.
Good heavens.
Mm.
If we go from there all the way to our former colony or fifth province or however you want to look at it, Namibia. Now, in 1989, Namibia had her first full election, and in that, every single ethnic group except the Ovambo voted against SWAPO. So they all voted for either the Democratic Turnhalla Alliance or other groups, but they voted against SWAPO. But that has changed, has it not?
Indeed. Namibia is an interesting example. It is one of the countries in Africa that has relatively few ethnic groups, and that appears to be an advantage, but as we've seen in the case of Zimbabwe, it's not always. But in Namibia, for instance, the president, Hage Geingob, is a Damara, not a Novambo. And there are other indications that the way ethnic problems are handled in Namibia tend to contribute to a consensus rather than conflict. It's not always the case. There was the Caprivi secession issue that had an ethnic component too. It led to the longest trial in the country's history, a treason trial in which a large number of people were convicted of treason. But on the whole, Namibia seems to be finding a middle road between denying ethnicity and according it some role.
In its politics, do we accord ethnicity more of a role in our own politics than perhaps we say we do?
Yes, very interesting question. You mean in South Africa?
Mm, mm.
Yeah. I think for a while the standard line after democracy was that we were going to be a multiracial democratic country in which ethnicity didn't play a significant role, but the fact is that it has. I mean, some commentators, and we have an interesting article about this in our journal too, argue that the Zuma takeover of the ANC as against Mbeki was partly motivated by a resentment at the Cosa Nostra, as they called it, which was a dominance of Xhosa speakers in the ANC. The interesting thing is that we now appear to have a dominance of isiZulu speakers.
And very much so?
Yes, it does appear, you know, if you compile lists of the people who've been appointed to significant posts, you find that there is quite a range of isiZulu speakers represented. And certainly a number of commentators have criticized President Zuma for Zulufying ANC politics.
So when the Xhosa took the ANC from Chief Albert Luthuli in the early 60s, these guys have got it back now and they plan to keep it, do they?
Yes, well, one story that I heard from an ANC member is that at Polokwane, when the Xhosa leaders got off the train to go and get some cool drink and chips, the Zulu speakers got on and drove the train away.
We've been chatting with Richard Jurgens of the NGO and Research Institute Good Governance Africa, and he's the editor of Africa, in fact, their quarterly journal. Richard, how could listeners get copies of Africa, in fact, or follow some of the Good Governance Africa's insights?
They can. You can certainly look at our website, www.gga.org, and you'll be able to get more information about how to get our publications.
That's www.gga.org. And thank you, listeners, for joining Richard, and Richard for coming on to the show and coming on at quite short notice. We thought we'd been speaking, but we hadn't been speaking on email. Long story. But thank you for being with us, and thank you, listeners, for joining me, Paul Pereira, and producer Trevor McClary on Changing Destiny. And please do the same thing at the same time next week right here on Radio Today from Dar es Salaam to Cape Town on DSTV Audio Channel 869 and in Johannesburg on Medium Wave 1485 AM.